Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, your weekly dose of insider DevOps trends, AWS news, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our Sweet Ops community, plus a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. It's November 27th, 2024. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator for AWS infrastructure that helps teams deploy their software faster. And we do this by leveraging our over 200 Terraform modules that have been battle-tested and downloaded over 100 million times. So no matter if your team is just getting started or banging your head against the wall with Terraform, just head over to cloudposse.com/meet. Again, cloudposse.com/meet. Answer a few quick questions, and you'll book a meeting with me directly. So, how can you maximize today's session? First off, our format's very informal. You can engage as much as you'd like, ask questions, and if you're curious about any of our open source tools or modules, go for it. And for those on the recording, we host these calls live. Join us by going to cloudposse.com/office hours. Again, cloudposse.com/office hours. I do have one ask. If you find any portion of this session useful, share it with your team. Just head over to youtube.com/cloudposse and you'll find the recording of today's session there in a few hours. So let's get started with some news and announcements for this week. All right. So first big announcement is something I'm excited about. While the migration is complete, our mission is far from complete. I'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. So, if you've been following Cloud Posse for some time, you're familiar with a different GitHub repo called Cloud Posse Terraform AWS Components. This is a mono repo that we've been maintaining for many, many years. It has all of these components in here. And we've gone through many, many heated debates inside of Cloud Posse how to properly version the components in this monorepo. We've riffed on a few of those ideas and ultimately threw in the towel. I think monorepos are great for your company and private software, but I don't think monorepos for distributing components of an architecture independently versioned is very practical with GitHub as the distribution source and the features of GitHub. So we bit the bullet with many thanks to one of our customers for sponsoring some of this work, which is creating this new GitHub organization managed under the Cloud Posse Enterprise. Has all of those same components migrated at the most recent release. Igor here on the call has been one of the big champions of this, helping make this happen. So a few things happen now that we've moved everything over into individual repositories under this new organization. So now components are free to vary independent of each other. We can use proper releases, as you see over here. We can start doing breaking changes, following proper SEMVer, and continuing to maintain previous releases through the use of release branches here. So anytime we cut a new release, major release, there'll always be a release branch so we can continue releasing older versions of that component. We can also leverage GitHub release notes, which are a much more effective way of communicating things like a change log and then aggregate those together. Now, this is not a perfect example of that. This is a very light change log, but as we continue to receive pull requests on those, you'll see more thorough change logs. The other thing is automated testing. So as part of all of this, we are going down the path of adding automated testing for all of our Terraform components. For us, components are your Terraform root modules. They compose other Terraform child modules in our open source ecosystem. If you're familiar with Cloud Posse's Terraform modules, all under the Cloud Posse umbrella here, nothing's changing about these modules here, and they already have Terra tests and so forth. These modules are less opinionated. They're intended for everyone to use however you want them to. And then our components are opinionated implementations of those modules the way we think of it. So stay tuned for more announcements on the automated testing portions of this. We are making a big pass at that over the coming weeks, ensuring that all the components have tests, and that'll ensure that we can accept contributions at a faster clip. Unlike before, It was very difficult for us to accept contributions because we didn't know what it was breaking. All right, that was a mouthful. Any questions on this component migration, how it impacts you, or why we're doing it, et cetera? Igor, anything you'd like to add to that?
So only two things. So the first one, I don't know if you saw it. So today I ran a migration script to preserve history. So that's why we have 622 tags. We have a commit related to this component with links to a pull request, and we preserve all authors. So not perfect. We lost kind of some information. We don't have them verified commits, but that's better than nothing. And
That's
the
really
second,
cool.
yeah. So the second thing I'd like to mention is that we also merged today documentation how you can migrate your current components to new one. We merged component updater GitHub action. To support all of that.
Oh, but Igor, we didn't add the link here. That was the thing I wanted, or this hasn't.
That's where I will check.
Okay.
I've merged a pull request, but I didn't check that
Oh,
it
you have to
hits
cut a release after
properly.
that.
Yeah, it's not released yet. I can cut that now for you.
I didn't know. I'm not so familiar with early engineering for documentation.
All right.
I'm sorry for
We'll
that.
talk about that after Dan cuts that release and share it.
Okay, I see. Daniel, can you handle that today, please?
Doing it right now, just triggered. It'll take about 12 minutes.
Okay, thank you. So I've merged a pull request for component updater GitHub action, and when you will run it, it will automatically rewrite your component YAML point to the right component in new organization. So the only thing is a components related to Spacelift and Transit Gateway, the special case that they will need like a manual attention.
So actually, great. You brought up two things. Let me highlight those as well. So, as Igor was saying, if you're using our component updater, it will automatically update the sources of your components to the new Cloud Posse home. So that minimizes the impact to you. And then you'll see what if the, there should be no diff other than the change of source of where that component was found. If there is an issue, please go to issues on the component updater and open an issue so we can take a look at that. Sooner the better. And the other thing Igor pointed out was this is in the documentation as well that didn't get released, but Dan is fixing that here in a second. If we go to this issue, which we talked about before, Igor did post, if you want to do this manually for some reason, or you can't use the component updater and you want to understand the logical relationship. So this was the component before, and this is the new home of that component. So this is the full mapping. And for the most part, it follows a very logical pattern. There were two or three exceptions that I think Igor broke up, or not didn't broke up, brought up.
So I'm
This
sorry
one
that
here,
I
right?
interrupt you. We have a couple components that were renamed. For example, AWS SSO renamed to Identity Center. And Argus CD repo renamed to Argus CD GitHub repo. Probably that is, but what I when I mentioned Spacelift and Transit Gateway, so the case it was delivered like a single component, and in components YAML it would it reference choose to reference to just a space lift or to just transit gateway and pull all of components. Now we split them into a multiple. So you will have to manually split and create a 2-3 components YAML for each of them. So that's a bit different scene, but 95% of components are strict one-to-one and very easy to follow the rules of how our name changed.
Any questions on this? All right. Next announcement is that's my slides here. All right. This one caught me off guard. AWS Copilot, which is not to be confused with GitHub Copilot or any other Copilot, was Amazon's what's the word, you know, the valiant effort at creating a better ECS experience that really felt a little bit more Heroku-like, but had the configurability of everything you can do on ECS. They've invested a lot in this CLI, giving it a very nice homepage and documentation. You know, I like this documentation a lot more than I like the AWS CLI documentation. Let me just put it that way. We've brought it up many times on office hours as an interesting approach to how to approach ECS. I'll be honest, Cloud Posse, we didn't get a chance to adopt it. We're still, you know, using Terraform for ECS predominantly, and another tool called Espresso to deploy to or update ECS task definitions. But this has always been on the radar as something I want to find out how to integrate it with everything else we do, because I think this is a better developer experience than just using raw Terraform. Unfortunately, what's become evident through some sleuthing is this project is on life support. So what was weird was earlier this week, there was a, Is Copilot still maintained this one? So there was a post that was taken down, and that post was announced in this commit, and you can see what the original announcement was, basically that we announced here end of support for the Copilot CLI. And then it was reverted in the next PR here in 75. But there was actually a GitHub discussion on this whole topic that hasn't been taken down. And they're basically saying that they're not doing any more investment into this Copilot. We are not actively developing any new features for Copilot, but still do some maintenance work. So this is eerily reminiscent of two other projects that I was following. So Fargate CLI I actually used back in the day. Now you can see that was an eternity ago in DevOps years. So that was 4 or 5 years ago. That CLI showed what it could really be like using ECS as a Heroku alternative. That project was abandoned, and then ECS CLI came out, and then that project was abandoned. Also, this is, you know, the AWS's main org, while the Fargate CLI was in the labs, and Copilot is in the main org as well. So ECS CLIs do not have a good track record at AWS. Anyone have thoughts or insights on this one?
My only quick thought on it is the fact that they had an announcement saying that they were end-of-lifing it and they pulled it back, and then they just then they kind of gave a vague answer. I'm wondering if there's some sort of timing issue where they are going to release something at reInvent that supersedes this or makes this not necessary, but someone inadvertently jumped the gun with the announcements on the tool that it will be that will be superseded by it. That's what it looked like to me, because that you don't generally see this kind of like weird behavior from Amazon and this kind of stuff. Usually they're pretty well coordinated on when they're going to end of life something. That was the only, I mean, pure speculation on my part, but that was the only thing that kind of came to mind.
It makes a lot of sense since reInvent starts next week.
Yeah, it's really the timing of it also led me to believe that that might be the case.
Interesting. All right, any other thoughts on this one? Okay, next announcement is part of the whole AWS reInvent announcement pollution you'll be encountering over the next week or so. You'll be drowned out in announcements from AWS, just showing just what an enormous organization it is. This was one that stood out. I think everyone who's worked with AOBs over the years has wanted this for one reason or another. If for no other reason than just setting your cross-site scripting cookies and so forth. So I think it was Michael Rosenfeld that brought this to my attention. So thanks. Excited for this. Next announcement was.
Just while I'll chime in, because I don't think it's on the list there. The other thing I saw that I thought was interesting in kind of the HTTP-ish world is that CloudFront distributions now support gRPC,
Oh, wow.
which is interesting. So, yeah.
I did miss that one.
Yeah, I didn't send it to you either, but I remember reading it like last week, I think, sometime.
To be clear, though, gRPC is not really a cacheable protocol, is it, over HTTP? So this would be more pass-through?
I'm not 100% sure, to be honest. I guess in theory you could cache responses just like anything else. I mean, it's just another protocol, right? Like so with protobufs and everything. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly how it all works, but I did see the headline.
Interesting. Yeah, these are a little bit out of order here, so I'll just keep going down so I don't miss anything, but I have more
Yeah.
like pre-reInvent announcements coming up.
There's the announcement in the in chat if anyone's interested. I just found it.
The next one strikes close to home, not directly in that we're affected by this brouhaha, but I've always been wondering when or if HashiCorp might pull this trump card out with Terraform in light of all the open tofu things and referring to things by the Terraform trademark. So Redis has flexed apparently and reached out to the maintainers of Redis Rust library and wanted to either take over it or have them rename their project. There's concerns obviously about that because if anybody's using that, it's going to change the functionality. Then again, it is their trademark. They should have rights to that. I don't know what the right answer is. Thoughts on this, anyone? Also wondered if, the fact that it was under a permissive license previously, but I don't think that it grants automatically any, rights to using trademarks. But I think that
Yeah,
system.
I'm sure that the previous license explicitly continued to protect their trademarks in there and against unauthorized use. So, yeah, that's an interesting one. I don't know. All these examples of this stuff happening is just going to continue to erode people's trust in using open source software, which really sucks.
Yeah, it really does. We don't want to get back to the world of shareware. Next announcement. This one is a Cloud Posse announcement. So many thanks to Mike Rosenfeld for submitting this PR. It's something we need a long, 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 long time ago. And I'm embarrassed that we haven't had it until now, but it is this, along with other list commands, is a priority in Atmos to make it easier to understand kind of the data model. We've always supported these describe commands in Atmos, which shows the full, like, deep merge data model in memory as JSON, but that's not always user-friendly unless you're trying to script something. So with this approach, you can now very easily list all of your stacks, list all of your components, and we're going to start doing this for every type of object that we have, making it easy to list what you have and making that view customizable. But that'll be coming in a subsequent pull request. So that was released as well. Let's go down here. That was released in 1.110 of Atmos. Also, we've been using a lot of CodeRabbit in all of these reviews, and I'm really happy with the suggestions that it's finding. Sometimes they're not appropriate for the pull request. One thing that I thought was really cool that I just saw in this pull request, I don't know if I can find an example of it right away, was CodeRabbit can also create an issue for it. Like, if you don't want to do it in this pull request, you can ask CodeRabbit just to create an issue for you so you can get back to it later on. So otherwise it felt kind of like, oh, this is a good suggestion. I want to do it, but I don't have time to do it in this pull request. So just by having that opportunity for it to create an issue for you, no changes, no suggestion gets left behind. I don't know where it was, but it wasn't one of these PR somewhere. All right. Any questions on that before we move on? So in perusing Helm file, I noticed something interesting. It was a link to this Guru Base. Never heard of it before. The name doesn't really roll off the tongue for me, but it is cool what they've done. They've created basically LLMs for every major open source project here. I can't figure out how to submit a project to this. I want to do that maybe for Atmos. But I got pretty good answers asking Helm file, how to create a config for multiple environments. And then it works just like the normal ChatGPT you're familiar with. So I'm sure there are ways you can trick it up, but I liked it, especially that you can ingest it based on the GitHub repository and that project's documentation. Had anyone seen this Guru base before? It was the first I heard of it.
This one here is specific to Helm file, and then all the other ones in the sidebar there, they're all different gurus, different.
Yep.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
I think just gurubase.io directly, I think, has all the it is like the canonical site for all this stuff.
Gurubase.io.
Yeah, I think that's where you that's where you end up there. Yep.
You can presumably ask all of them. Quite a lot of projects, but what it really is an interesting way of kind of showcasing. I think GuruBase is a enterprise LLM software that you can install at your company, and this is a way of them showcasing the tech leveraging open source projects.
It'd be interesting to see if there's a Helm file guru versus raw ChatGPT, see if there's a
Right.
difference, in quality of answer kind of thing, or.
Agreed. All right, next announcement. Yep, I close that tab. This one, I think it was you, Matt, who shared it with me. Aurora Serverless V2 now supports scaling to zero. That's kind of cool, especially for your dev environments, possibly, or databases that are mostly associated with cron jobs that run periodically. You can scale those down now to zero.
Yeah, or things that just happen to be like, only available during office hours or, that kind of, or,
Yeah.
business hours, et cetera. But at least it's an option now where it will automatically support. Well, it will support you. It has a setting now to automatically scale itself to zero. So you don't even have to manually scale it to zero. So you can tell it when it has no traffic to scale to zero.
And it supports both the Postgres and MySQL out of the box, so that's cool.
Yeah.
All right, this was a article trending on Hacker News this week, related to a lot of the people on this call. If you're ever on call, curious what your schedules are. Are they typically running a full week? Do you start them on Mondays, or do you start them kind of midweek? The argument here is they should be started midweek, especially in the US. We have a lot of 3-day holidays, and that keeps it kind of more fair. And also, if there are any incidents over the weekend, this helps you, on Monday, log those tasks and get work started on those. Announcement was back to reInvent, pre-reInvent announcements. As we saw earlier this year, they added the ability for conditional writes. This is expanding on that support, allowing you to have a policy requiring that you check an object exists before writing it. And then related to that was another one where you, I believe, previously the functionality could only check for the existence of the object. Now you can check that the object is unmodified before updating it. So basically, that the SHA, if you will, of the object or the version of the object is the same before you go to write, knowing that so that you know that there were no other writers at the same time. And as we've talked about, this is kind of cool for S3, the backends on AWS. The combination of these capabilities mean soon you don't need to have the DynamoDB anymore to use S3 as a backend.
This is cool. Is it going to be similar to Azure Buckets, by the way? Because in Azure backend, you don't need like a
Yeah.
we'll handle but okay, that's cool.
Exactly. So Amazon S3 is a little bit behind the curve in terms of some of this functionality. So
Yeah.
they're playing catch up.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, they're playing catch up because they were the pioneers, right? In this one, like everyone else got to see what they did first
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
copy them and then
Second mover
add on
advantage.
top of that. Yeah. So.
And I wonder what the sheer scale of Amazon S3 is relative to the competitors. It's got to be like an order of magnitude or more.
I mean, it's probably an order of magnitude greater just because Amazon uses it. Like no joke. Like on top of all the stuff that they actually store for like the Amazon e-commerce side of things has got to be gigantic. Like, petabytes and petabytes of data.
Yeah. Another announcement is follow-up. We've talked about the alpha releases of HashiCorp BSL license Terraform coming out with ephemeral resources. That has now been officially released. This is a nice write-up talking about how you use those ephemeral resources. The key thing about ephemeral resources is that they're not persisted in the Terraform state, which has been a request for a long time because the state can sometimes contain secrets. I'm not too yet versed on technical details here, but that is that what this means, though, is especially as you see it's been implemented, you know, if that is used in a Terraform module, that module is now broken in OpenTofu until OpenTofu implements comparable support or can gracefully degrade, which is interesting. I haven't seen any mention of that. Maybe that's a trade-off that OpenTofu can make initially, is gracefully degrade in certain ways like this with a warning. I don't know what users would want.
It's interesting, though. The like the core internals of Terraform like this, the data, like data resource and, you know, provider and everything, are actually defined, like their interface definitions and everything are actually in the SDK.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably this would be available to OpenTofu, like in the SDK. Like they don't need their own version of it, right? Because
right. Yeah, exactly. So if the so the providers are going to be compatible, aren't affected by the license changes anywhere. So, oh, and the plugin SDK, to your point,
is the thing that defines that there is a data source or a resource, or now presumably like locals, presumably ephemeral will now exist in that. I haven't actually looked at it, but presumably that's where they define this thing. So all they'll need to do is hopefully upgrade their you know resource and be done with it, because and all the internals of the providers basically use the provider SDK or the plugin SDK.
And this is MPL licensed still.
It has to be, or else none of the providers could use it.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if that latest version is the thing that implemented like ephemeral, or just search for that maybe somewhere in there.
Yep.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
Cool. Any questions on this before we move on? And the last one was just something that caught my eye. I was trending in Reddit for Kubernetes, which was a plugin for Helm using the Common Expression Language, which I hadn't seen before. Think of it like an alternative to a JSON schema for validating your values.yaml in an expressive way that's clear. So if you're not familiar with Helm, it's very pluggable. They follow a pattern similar to what GitHub uses, the GitHub or the Git CLI uses rather, to make it pluggable. I think they call it a porcelain API. So your plugins can be written in any language. And then when you run the Git CLI command, you can actually see them in the help. So that's cool. Has anyone used Cell before? I've never seen it before. All right, that's the end of my announcements. Anything else catch your eye this past week for the pre-reInvent announcements or otherwise? All right, well, let's do our
Sorry. I was going to say I had one that I found. I was trying to find the link to it so I could send it here. That one of the announcements talked about an enhanced UI experience that they were bringing to the console, which included like a security score and some other things to there. And I mean, while that announcement was just, I mean, it was whatever. Like, it seemed interesting. But what I found in there is that I never realized this, is that there's actually a whole design system that AWS has published, like in all their UIs are built on top of, where they've released all of their component, their React components basically as open source and a bunch of other things. So I just dropped the link for that right there in the chat. I thought it was interesting. I'm not particularly the biggest fan of AWS's look and feel and how they do all this, but as far as how you would release a design system and document it and give examples, I thought that this website was actually awesome, like how the whole thing
that
worked.
It is really cool. Yeah.
And they have lots of they have lots of examples, and you can go into each component and toggle like light mode and dark mode and sample data and use it and every possible thing. So, you know, it's a lot like Storybook. If you're a web developer out there, like Storybook gives you kind of the same functionality, but this is a much prettier version of that. And it also shows you how, if you dig into the source code of some of these components, like some of the best practices that you can think of around like accessibility and responsive design and some other things that AWS has clearly spent, you know, a ton of time on making it work. So it's just an interesting project to, you know, go on a deep dive on if you, you know, you just want to geek out on it for a little while. I'm not the biggest fan of the look and feel, but I thought the project was well done.
Very cool. All right. And Dan just shared that we did that release for our documentation on the component upgrading path is now live. And you can learn more how to update by following this guide here, which is the manual way of doing it. All right. So that brings us to the Q&A portion of our office hours. Any questions we can get answered today?
I had one that I just posted to the office hours channel earlier. And I have something we could discuss too, if we run out of things. Really, I'm wondering what people use for static analysis on Terraform, like what actually provides value. I think we've used a number of different things, and we've kind of narrowed in on just being using TFLint and Trivy. Those two tools, like kind of at a baseline, they can give us some good security heads up, and they can tell us to conform to like pretty standard conventions. But if anybody has any other static analysis tools, I'd be interested.
Yeah, I followed this message as well because I was curious to see what the recommendations would be.
And somebody recommended a number of security tools. And I mean, I think that there's like half a dozen security linters. Checkov and TFSec and Terrascanner are the ones that usually come up. TFSec, I think, is what is built into Trivy because Trivy is made by Aqua Security, and so is TFSec, I believe. And maybe there isn't more, right? Linting and kind of security checks for infrastructure as code feels like, you know, you're covering a lot of the big, you're covering a lot of your bases there. But if anybody had anything that came to mind, I'm just like kind of gathering research right now.
Yeah, I guess the only other thing I would mention is that Sneak or Snick or however the heck you pronounce that SNYK company has been in the game for a long time. And I believe that they have an official partnership with HashiCorp. Like that's actually how TF Cloud, or not TF, but Terraform Cloud actually does their scanning stuff. So
that's a good point. Worth looking at. I don't think that one's free, but I should look into it again. Yeah,
it's not. It works well from what I've heard. Like I've used it for non-Terraform things on a lot of stuff, and it worked really well. I have a couple of friends that are using it for Terraform and have good things to say about it. I've just never had the chance to try it.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks for bringing it up.
It's interesting that they have issues disabled on this repository.
Were they saying to migrate to TF to Trivi? Is it because it's like no longer?
So I TFSec, I remember seeing at some point an announcement, or maybe they've just decided to move to discussions, which is an interesting idea. I mean, issues are a little bit redundant with discussions, depending on how you look at it.
TFSec is joining the Trivi family, makes me think that it's maybe like.
Yeah, yeah, is it under Trivi now? Maybe there's maybe they're migrating it.
Yeah,
I think it is. I think I heard something about that a while back when I was working with the stuff.
Yeah,
on a I project thought or something.
That this, that this was now. I thought there was even an announcement in the repo, but I could be thinking of another project then. Let's see here. Trivi is still pinned. Oh no, Trivi is pinned. So that's probably the one then.
Yeah, makes sense. Trivi does a lot. It's not just IEC. Yeah. It's all the things, kind of. Mm-hmm. It'll look for secrets and stuff. But yeah, cool.
Also, Pepe, are you here?
He said he might not make it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I don't think I can add too much more to your question. You had a question for office hours that we briefly touched on, which was about monorepo releases and if we ever found a solution for like versioning independent services or components within a monorepo like that. Yeah, the TLDR on that I shared was we didn't, and we decided to move everything to individually versioned repositories. If you have a monorepo, I think the approach is similar to what maybe Alex Atkinson was talking about, which is you need a version file in each one of your components. You need some checks around that to make sure it's always updated if the files within that path are updated. And then you need an artifact storage. You can't use the GitHub repository itself very conveniently if you're also going to use it for this monorepo and versioning. So if you push an artifact like to ECR, or if you push it to Artifactory or S3 or something else that keeps track of those. But now you have this other system that you got to track for that. I think that works therefore in a private enterprise, but it's a little more cumbersome, I think, in the GitHub landscape. So by using GitHub repositories themselves also as the store of the artifact, it's all self-contained, and I like that.
Yeah, I'll just add that I recently also had this conversation with a customer, and the only tool set that I found that at enterprise scale that can kind of handle this really well is Bazel, like the open source monorepo tool from that originated in Google. Learning curve is extremely steep to learn it, but once you do learn it, you can do almost anything with any technology out there that exists. So it has lots of abilities to like deal with change detection, independent versioning, building artifacts, publishing artifacts, like doing all those things. And there are a couple of like community plugins for Terraform in there. I haven't had a chance to actually try to go like do this, but maybe as we get closer to the holidays and I take some time off and I have nothing to do, maybe I'll kick the tires on this and try to see if I could put together a proof of concept on using it. So,
yeah.
But it gives you the ability to define like a proper dependency chain and all of that kind of thing. So if you change files and in one place, it knows to rebuild all the other ones and do a bunch of other things. So it's pretty smart in its tooling. It's just very I don't know. I usually pick up technologies really quickly, and that one in particular felt very difficult for me to kind of grok all the ins and outs of it. But once I did, it seemed pretty good. I used it for like for writing like tools in other languages, not in Terraform. So
which is predominantly what it was geared towards, probably.
Yeah, yeah. And they were like,
for ex-Googlers that started the project.
Yeah, and I was writing stuff in, like, you know, Java and C at the time, and they have lots of cookbook and type examples for those, you know, those technologies in particular. So
yeah. All right, Matt, I think you said you had some other topics maybe, or was somebody else jumping
one
in there?
Thing, sorry, one thing for Pepe, in case he does watch this recording, is Alex Atkinson mentioned his project GitOps automatic versioning in the chat, which seems like it's built for monorepos and managing directories. So that might be something Pepe should look into.
Oh, sorry, Alex, I didn't mean to brush over that. Thanks for calling that out.
I have a question if there's no other
yeah, go for it.
Questions pending. And it's not Terraform specific, so you can tell me to, you know, bring it into a different forum. But I think it'll intrigue people. We recently had a migration away from AWS classic load balancers to application load balancers. To our surprise, that caused a lot of 502 errors. And we're still puzzled as to why that is. You know, we checked everything, configuration settings, you know. The 502 errors were intermittent. So only maybe, I don't know, 25 to 30% of requests would hit 502 errors. The one thing that we noticed was much higher latency on the ALB than on the classic. Classic, you know, responses would come back in, I don't know, a millisecond or 10 milliseconds. I can't remember the number now. Whereas it would be like around 5 to 10 seconds for the ALB. And
5 to 10 seconds?
Yeah. 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 It is really bizarre. And it's so we're still kind of scratching our heads and looking at various, you know, explanations. And in the meantime, we have to use NLBs instead of application load balancers. And that's okay. But I'm just really puzzled and wondering if anyone else has any ideas of things we could look at that could explain this.
Did you open up an AWS support issue on it?
Yeah, we did actually. And they didn't really have much to say. They were saying this is application side. So, you know, we need to get more data on that. But I just can't think of how changing something in front of the application could, you know, could cause that increase. We figure it's the increased latency. It's not necessarily the increased latency might be a symptom more than, you know, a direct indication of cause. So, yeah, so I don't know if anyone has any ideas, that would be really appreciated. It's a really puzzling one, so.
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing that comes to mind is maybe there's something happening with headers in the ALB versus what was in the classic load balancer. And
that's like, what I thought too at some point. But go ahead. Yeah.
I was just going to say somehow that's causing your application to behave differently. The first thing I would do is crank up your logging all the way on the ALBs and then go look at the actual request logs and see, it will actually show you all the headers that are being passed through and their values. And it will show you all the metrics of like request time, response time from both the client perspective as well as the upstream like server perspective. And then maybe those things will help you kind of narrow down as to where, you know, where it might be coming from.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. One hypothesis that I had was that maybe the, like, you know, in the classic LB, all the headers would just go through invisibly, whereas in the LB, I thought maybe it's stripping some headers. But the Amazon guy said no, everything just